ready to teach a manager's class. And then the 19th of April, which is a week from Friday, we will be having a Thursday food handler class in Columbus at Medical Lodges. That class is for anyone that really handles food on a daily basis for their job or works with food. If you are somebody that does a lot of potlucks, this might be a great opportunity for you to come and get some training on safe food handling practices as well.
Now, Holly, is this fulfill any requirements for employment, maybe for people who are going to be working in the food industry at all?
It could be. If their employer requires a food safety training, this is the training that you would want to take. It's very basic for food handlers, and it talks about the things that we deal with all the time when we're handling food. Personal hygiene, cross-contamination, time and temperature that food stays out at room temperature, and then what temperature or time that food stays out at room temperature, and what temperature food needs to be cooked at to be safe. And then we also talk about cleanliness and sanitation. So all of those things are, those five things are the things that most often will make our food become unsafe to eat or cause a foodborne illness. And personal hygiene is probably the number one causer of food to become a risk for us.
Well, you know, that's a great point. You bring that up. And, you know, I was thinking I was actually just watching here a video not too long ago about a little bit of a school meal preparation back in the 60s. And, you know, they always have to read the comments, right? And people are saying, oh, my gosh, I can't believe they weren't wearing gloves. And it's like, well, I mean, if you wash your hands, you know, practice those personal hygiene. I mean, it's my understanding that, you know, gloves aren't magic. I mean, they're not going to. I mean, if you touch something like a raw meat or something with a glove, and then go to make a salad or something without changing that glove or washing your hands, I mean, you're doing no good. I mean, what's the current thinking, you know, on gloves, and do you touch on that at all in the training?
We do. We talk about when is appropriate to wear gloves, how you wear a glove, that they are a single-use glove. If you do touch anything that could have bacteria on it, just like you said, that then your gloves need to be changed. We also share experiences, and I had an experience once where I watched a gentleman prepare my food in front of me, and he had raw hamburger and he stuck it on the grill with his glove, and then he turned around and he grabbed my bun, and I said, whoa, stop, you need to stop right there. And I made him change his gloves, and then I explained to him why he needed to change his gloves. So teaching this is kind of a curse, but there's a lot of good information in the class, and that class starts at 8:30 that morning at Medical Lodges in Columbus. So if you're interested in that, you can give me a call at 630-331-2690, and we'll get you signed up for that class.
That's excellent. Now, is there any cost associated with the class?
There is. There's a $15 cost, which is, if you're thinking about taking the class, you want to take it now because our procedures are changing. And as soon as I use up my old books, then we will the class cost will increase because the books will be more expensive. So now is a great time to take the class and get it at a reduced price. In the future, the price is going to go up.
Okay, well, that is a fantastic reminder there. So a really good opportunity for folks if they need to get that all taken care of. And, you know, something that all of us, even in our own, you know, cooking, can learn from too. So I know, speaking of education and cooking, you do have an opportunity for the kids coming up, right?
We do. Before I talk about that, though, I do want to mention, and James can talk about this more probably, tomorrow night, our homesteading series is going to be on making soap, so that's always a good, clean topic. And then on the 25th of April, we will be doing pressure canning, and that class will be in Independence. So if anybody's interested in pressure canning and all the things that go along with that, join that class at 6 o'clock at Independence at the ICC Fab Lab on the West Campus.
Excellent. That's going to be great.
Homesteading. Yep. Yeah. So one of the main things I wanted to talk with everyone about right now is our Kitchen Kids Camp. Those camps are open to youth that are 10 to 12 years old. Those youth will learn to use kitchen tools. They'll prepare food. They'll also develop skills like working together, teamwork, discussion, being able to present, and as well as the cooking skills. Those classes or those camps are all going to be in June, and registration is open here in April. So I looked at my list last night, and we've had six people register in the last day. So they do; those camps do fill up fast, and the first camp is in Caney. It is June 4th through 6th from 9 to 11:30. All the camps are from 9 to 11:30 in the morning. And to register, they would need to go to either our website to scan the QR code, or there's a link that they can get on. And if they call our office, it might be easier. I can give it to you over the phone or over the air, but having a QR code going to our website would probably be easier to do. But the link is tinyurl.com/kitchen-kids-2024. So that's the link. The registration is all done through the link, and there is a $10 cost, which will pay for the food that is used, and each youth that comes to camp gets an apron. And we've been able to do that. This is the fourth year that we've had Kitchen Kids Camp. Each year we switch it up a little bit. Our food will be different this year, so if your child has attended camp in the past, they will do the applesauce again, but we will have other recipes that go along with it. So that's a great way for them to continue to learn more skills if they come year after year. Again, that's open to youth 10 to 12 years old. The first camp is in Caney, June 4th through 6th. Then we'll come to Coffeyville on June 11th through the 13th. And we will be in Oswego on June 25 through 27. So we've had great partners with the FCS teacher in Caney and the United Methodist Church in Coffeyville. And then the city of Oswego, we're using their community building for the classes. And all of those places have been great. They love to have us come, and the kids really did enjoy it. The first youth that signed up this year actually attended the Coffeyville camp last year. So that's pretty exciting.
Well, that is excellent. What a great opportunity. You know, it proves that kids can cook more than a bowl of cereal and toast.
Yes. And I will say, too, that the first person that signed up was a young man. So he came to camp last year and really enjoyed it, and he's the first person to sign up again this year. So he's got the bragging rights on that.
Well, that's great. Like you said, you know, it's not just a one-and-done thing. You can learn something each and every time you attend. So fantastic stuff there. I know that the Wildcat District website, always a great way for folks to kind of get all of that in front of them and, you know, see just all the upcoming events. But is there anything else you'd like to share with us here this morning, Holly?
No, if people need their pressure canners tested, I guess they can give our office a call at 331-2690, and we would be glad to test those pressure canners and get them ready for the canning season. I'll also have my pressure canner available at that class on April 25th at ICC.
Well, excellent. That's fantastic. And I know that people are already starting to think about, you know, the summer coming up and the canning season underway. And I know that, that's definitely an important thing to have done as, you know, before we start, especially maybe you have an older one that hasn't been tested in a while. Always good to get that calibrated and all of that.
Yeah, we don't do the calibration, but we will test it
yes,
for you.
Yes,
let me know whether it's in a safe range or not, or how to make an adjustment if it's only off 1 or 2 PSI.
Absolutely, yeah. You get good information, just like we get soil samples. So, all right. Well, Holly,
that's great.
I appreciate you coming on by here this morning, and best of luck there. And we'll look forward to talking again here real soon. Appreciate all these great events that you're putting on for us.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, James, for letting us come on the air and talk about these things. And you have a great day.
All right. You too. That is Holly Miner here on the Mighty 690 in our Green Setup program. And coming up in our next segment, we'll have James Coover. And James, what are you going to be talking about here upcoming?
So I'm going to be talking about wheat, actually. Mostly about kind of stuff that we've been seeing out there, but a little bit focused on the rust diseases, because that's kind of prevalent, and we're just at the beginning of that season. So.
Okay, that's what we'll talk about next here on the Mighty 690. And weather-wise, well, we do have some rain coming down right now, and we'll go be checking out the rain gauge, seeing what it's doing. But Coffeyville kind of on the back edge of this latest round that's kind of moving to the north and mostly to the east. So folks in Baxter Springs are already starting to see some sprinkles in the Galena area down to Commerce. And Miami going to get a little bit of rain here in just a little bit. And that rain really stretches all the way down to Pawhuska. So a little bit of good moisture for us this morning. Again, nothing severe, so that's good. 55 degrees right now in Coffeyville. News coming up. Back here at 8:11 on our Green Setup program brought to you by Green Acres. And we have joining us crop agent James Coover. Good morning, sir. How you doing?
Doing good. How are you?
Hey, doing well. So, you know, it seems to me, and from my untrained eye, at least compared with last year, I mean, I would feel like we've had pretty consistent rain. I feel like that's good for the winter wheat. Yep. Seems like things are doing okay.
Yeah, they really are. They are very far ahead of schedule, but the wheat looks pretty good, honestly.
So do you think being ahead of schedule is going to be a problem? I mean, obviously, if we got some sort of freeze, that might be, but...
That was the problem, you know, a couple weeks ago, March 26th, 27th, when we got those really cold nights. And so we were, you know, sitting on edge those couple of nights because it definitely got cold enough to do some damage. And I've gone around and I've looked at some fields, mostly, you know, Montgomery, Labette, even some into Crawford, and I haven't seen a whole lot. And so I think that we might be okay. However, you know, that I'm not really sure farther north whether it got worse there or not, because, I mean, they got colder, but they weren't quite as far along. And, I mean, in the valleys, you know, like the Neosho Valley or the Vigorous Valley, there are some areas that definitely could have seen some damage. And so at least the fields that I've checked, but because it's freeze damage, it's very spotty. And so there could be some damage out there, but I just haven't seen it yet. Hopefully we bypass that, but you never know.
You never know, but I know that we're going to be talking a little bit more wheat here in a moment, but I wanted to let you hit on any upcoming events we got coming up.
So, like Holly said, there's actually, we have the Homesteader Series, and tomorrow we're going to be making soap, old school way. And so I boiled down some tallow, some lard, and pretty much it's just lard and lye and water and, you know, making it the old way. But of course you can add scented oils and other things. But we're going to be doing that. We're also going to be doing a fermentation workshop as well and some other things. And so we still got plenty of fun stuff left to do.
Oh, that's great. No, it's going to be a good opportunity, you know, be able to do stuff, yeah, like they did back in the day. So,
yeah
who'd have thought, you know, soap making. But I think that's cool. The homesteading series, you know, just a really unique opportunity, I think. It's definitely,
yeah.
Has it been pretty popular as far as attendance?
Oh, yeah, it has been. Yeah, we've been doing all kinds of fun stuff. So, yeah.
That's great. Well, as I know, like I said, we want to talk a little bit about wheat, some kind of diseases, that sort of thing, things we might want to be keeping an eye out as we get that winter wheat just chugging right along.
Yeah, definitely. And so we have been seeing some barley yellow dwarf more than usual, but that's pretty common. It's just because it's been so mild. It was mild, you know, in the fall where those little aphids were running around. They carry barley yellow dwarf. And so you see that in little patches of yellow around the field, just little circles. I mean, they're not very big at all. We see that every single year. There's not really much you can do about it at this point because it's a virus that the aphids carry. But, you know, it's a good idea to keep an eye on it just so that you know just how bad it is. I have seen fields that are real bad. Like, there was enough aphid damage out there that a whole field had some amount of barley yellow dwarf. But for the most part, you know, it is worse than usual this year just because of the mild weather, but yeah, pretty common. Mostly, I'm worried about the stripe rust at this point. And so I have already started to get the calls on the stripe rust. And it is definitely a concern this year. And so soon the stripe rust, it's a fungal disease. It blows in from the south. It doesn't overwinter here. And so every year, you know, the southern winds, they blow the stripe rust in from Texas into Oklahoma and then to Kansas and then farther up north. So we are always looking south, whether stripe rust is going to be bad or not. And they've had perfect weather for stripe rust. And so the reports from southern Oklahoma was that they've seen real bad stripe rust, like worse that they've seen in a number of years because it's been dry. This year it's been warm and plenty of rain and moisture down there to get the stripe rust really activated. And because it's ahead of schedule, it's kind of been an issue. So usually we start to see stripe rust here maybe around mid to late April. So we're just now beginning to get into the stripe rust season, at the beginning edge of it. And, you know, you can have a huge loss. I mean, the most severe stripe rust in a very susceptible variety, it could be up to a 50% yield loss. I mean, that's a huge amount.
That's crazy.
And so stripe rust, it likes high humidity. It likes temperatures around 50 to 60 degrees. So this is perfect kind of weather. What's going on outside right now? That's perfect weather for stripe rust. And it's something we might be seeing more over the next few weeks. So because the spring has been acceptable in Oklahoma, I think there's reports already in like Tipton and Oklahoma and some other the southern parts that they're seeing it pretty bad. I'm guessing they're going to start seeing it in Stillwater. And that's when we know that we need to start be prepared. And so Stillwater is kind of the bell of watching for stripe rust in this area. So as it moves in, we needed to be thinking about fungicide in our susceptible varieties. Of course, there's going to be a lot more chance of yield response with fungicide application in susceptible varieties than non-acceptable. Basically, Everest, which is the old school king of wheat varieties around this area, it's not very resistant to stripe rust. And so it's always kind of been an issue in this area. Of course, now we have other varieties and there's, you know, other varieties from other places. So it really depends on that. But the thing with stripe rust is you have to prepare for it before you see it. So really what you're trying to do is protect the flag leaf, because the flag leaf is responsible for 80-90% of your yield. So there's no point in spraying for your field until after you see the flag leaf. But you have to keep in mind that fungicide, it doesn't last throughout the entire season. So it only lasts, you know, 3 weeks at the most after you spray that flag leaf. And so it's just something to keep in mind that you don't want to spray it too early, because really you're just trying to protect that one leaf. If you spray it too early and that runs out, that stripe rust is going to start hitting that leaf right at the wrong point, because it's creeping up from the lower canopy onto that flag leaf, and it's just bad timing. So really what farmers need to be doing as the flag leaves are emerging, kind of keep an eye on the fields. If you start to see it in the lower canopy, that's the right time to spray. Get that flag leaf protected, because if you're not seeing it that in that lower canopy, you know, that's where it begins before it gets onto that flag leaf. So once that flag leaf is protected, there's always kind of a thing. It's hard because there's two diseases we are most concerned with in Southeast, stripe rust, and the other one is Fusarium. Fusarium is in the fields already. It overwinters here. And it just is much worse in years where we have rainy weather during enthesis. Basically, the little pollen guys are popping out of the heads. And that's when that fungus gets in there and it causes, you know, the mitotoxins issues and all the other stuff we have to deal with. But the problem is those spray periods between stripe rust and Fusarium are two different things. And you don't want to spray them twice.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, that's a lot of money. So it's just a matter of knowing this, how susceptible your variety is, keeping an eye on that flag leaf, keeping on the lower canopy, and kind of just making that decision. A lot of farmers are just going to spray their field one way or the other. But really, if you want to be economic about it, just know your variety. And because this year is a year where stripe rust might really be an issue. I mean, what the weather that Oklahoma just got and is getting now, and the weather that we're getting right now, it's pretty indicative to a pretty severe stripe rust season. So, you know, we're ahead of schedule. We're not, I wouldn't say more, not more rain than usual, but Oklahoma got more rain than usual. So it's a good situation for what we're going to see.
Gotcha. No. So, you know, if folks are, you know, trying to do some planning and everything, you know, what is kind of the best advice about, you know, if people are going to try to buy some of, you know, these products, that sort of thing?
Yes.
What would you tell them?
So the fungicide itself, we do have a publication they put out every single year about what sort of fungicides are available out there, what sort of goes with what very well. Most fungicides do a pretty good job, honestly. But one thing, though, just like everything we talk about, you got to mix your modes of action. And so multiple modes of action is going to help because stripe rust is becoming more resistant to things just like everything else. And so some things are going to work better than others. You know, some people like to use the really expensive fungicides. Yeah, you know, sometimes that's worth it. They do last a little bit longer. But sometimes there's, you know, the regular cheap generic fungicides work pretty good too. So it's just something to keep in mind, but make sure that you're mixing you're getting the right fungicide for the right diseases. Most of them cover, they're pretty broad in range, but a lot of the brands are going to have multiple fungicides types in there, and that's something you definitely want to look for. Keep in mind the timing. That's more important than anything else, is that it doesn't last forever. But you got to protect it before that flag leaf has those lesions. Because once those lesions, that's a dead spot. They don't recover from it. So
now, obviously, you can't do anything about it now, but are there any varieties of weed out there that are more resistant to this?
Absolutely. There are some varieties that are much more resistant. They have basically, there's four or five different types of resistance within the genetics of wheat. And some varieties have stacked genetics, and so they have stacked genetics of that resistance to stripe rust and the various other types of rust. And, you know, it can be a huge difference. Like when we're talking about the variety plots that we'll, in May, we'll have our spring field day at the Parsons Center, and it is so terribly obvious between which ones are resistant to diseases and which ones aren't. I mean, they're sitting right side by side. And so there is plenty of pressure on the susceptible and resistant varieties. And you can see clear as day which ones are susceptible and which ones aren't. So,
yeah, absolutely. So if people do have, you know, questions for you, obviously, you know, I know you're going to be busy here with all sorts of questions as we kind of get into this prime time here. But what is the best way to get a hold of you, James, and if people do need to talk to you?
Yeah, so if they need to get a hold of me, if they're looking for, you know, the fungicide publications or they're looking for the maps, they should just now start to be putting that stuff out. And if farmers are seeing this stuff, please let me know. Because I need to put it on our maps, too, and inform the farmers that are farther north. So the number is 620-724-8233.
Excellent. Well, that's a great reminder, too, that, you know, just like the National Weather Service tells us, hey, let us know if you're seeing weather. Also, crop people would really like to know if you're seeing something.
Yes. Because,
I mean, that could help down the line
get the word out. We're on the front line here in southeast Kansas. And so here and the rest of the counties farther, you know, southwest, I mean, we're right here. And so we're the first ones that are going to see it in Kansas, and it's going to go north from here.
Yeah, well, you can really get that word out if it's happening. So anything else you'd like to share with us this morning, James?
Nope, but just remember, if anybody's interested in those homesteading series, and we've got some other programs coming up. So, I mean, we're, you know, always got lots of stuff to do
in
the Wildcat District.
I know you guys are very busy, so we appreciate all you're doing for us and helping out our producers. That's where it's at. So, all right, James, well, thank you so much for coming on by, and I look forward to chatting again soon.
Yep, thanks so much.
James Cooper here on the Mighty 690, and hey, in just a few minutes, about 15 minutes or so, we will be getting started with an early bird edition of Open Line. That's straight ahead here on KGGF.